Oh, you got the thing behind you. Number 14.
It's the ruckus number 14. It's the ruckus.
Do you need some inspiration music? Do we need to play Queen?
No.
Okay.
No. What did they say at the beginning of it? Ladies and gentlemen, it's the ruckus show!
It's time to play the music. It's time to light the lights. It's time to get things started on the Muppet Show tonight.
Boom, boom, boom. The Ruckus Show.
The Ruckus Show tonight. Oh, shit.
Why don't you get it started? It's the Ruckus number 14. I'm Justin.
And I'm Rachel.
Welcome to the show. How are you doing? That's nice. I'm fine. Thanks for asking. So, Rachel, I've been doing a lot of diligent research on our next destination, on where we should go.
World traveling?
Yes. I know we just got back from London not too long ago, but always forward, always looking to the future, am I?
The horizon.
Looking off into the horizon of the future. Is where I'm looking. And our next great travel destination that I am predicting...
Yes?
Is Rapa Nui.
Oh, where's Rapa Nui?
Rapa Nui...
Hot Patootie?
...is Easter Island.
But you said... How are we going to get there?
Well, here's what you do. You go to Santiago, Chile.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Santiago, Chile.
Oh.
You go to Santiago, and you grab a plane... That goes to Rapa Nui.
You know, it's like one of those little putt-putt, like crop duster, you know, little putters.
Well, I hope that it isn't, because it's about 2,000 miles away from land. So I'm hoping that they would put it on something that makes you feel a little more safe than that. But who knows? Maybe it is.
So they do have, like, tarmac at an airport. I didn't think that they did.
They have, apparently... Tourism is the number one industry in Rapa Nui. So, yes, they do have travel to and from. Costs about $800 U.S. both ways. And they say that the best thing to do is when you get there to look for lodging. To look for...
you're sleeping on the tall grass. That's what you're doing.
No, you stay in people's houses. People put up guest houses and rent out their guest houses for people. And they say that that's a better thing to do than to try to stay in one of the resorts or hotels.
You have been diligently researching. Well, that's more preferable anyway. I don't want to stay in a stupid fucking hotel if I could stay with, like, the locals. That's cool.
Yeah, they also mentioned that the local will then stab you in the throat and steal your wallet. But
oh, like Long Beach.
Yeah.
Great.
No, they don't say that, but I'm sure the American consulate probably says something like that. But when you travel to distant lands, you take your life in your own hands.
That's a poem.
I know. Well, I was starting one.
Yeah, it's like a rap.
And then you can look off into the sands. And boy, won't that be grand? So, yes, Rapa Nui, that's going to be our next destination. Maybe not in linear sequence, but the next in my heart.
Excellent. I can't wait.
And as everybody knows, Rapa Nui is home of one of the 8 wonders of the world, the giant tiki head things. They don't know where those came from, by the way. They have theories. They have theories.
Yeah, I really want to look into that because, you know, like I have a little archaeology background, and I would be curious to read the papers written by the professionals, if you will.
Well, and some people say they came from Peru.
Oh.
Some people say they're Polynesian. And some people say aliens.
Well, I mean, I don't know how they can come from Peru, because what, they don't float. So, like, how do you...
They say that the stonework is so similar... to the Incans that, I mean, even the Polynesians, they didn't carve them on Easter Island. It's a tiny, teeny, tiny little island.
Right. They don't know where the resources came from.
Well,
yes.
Yeah. Something got imported.
Hmm.
So it had to come from somewhere. And they say that the stonework is remarkably similar to the Incan stonework. And that's, you know, Peru. So there you have it.
That's fascinating.
Little little fun Rapa Nui fun fact for you.
Rapa Tootie for your Nui.
Why don't you lay some news on me? Lay it on me.
All right, Justin. Well, let me put this to you, okay? If I was to say to you, best friends again, what would you think I'd be talking about that's newsworthy?
Well, Friends Reunion. It's going to be a Friends Reunion program, 25 years in the making. Ross, Rachel, Monica, Chandler, and Bill and Sandy are all going to get together again over at the whatever the coffee shop is, and they're going to yet again make witty observations about the nuances and minutiae of life.
Well, and now as riveting as that might be for those people that love Friends, I actually have something different to share about that.
Do you ever think they should have made an episode where they were like, man, I'm tired of Joey. Like, I need to... It's not that I don't like Joey. I just need to take a little Joey break, you know?
What if they did it like audience response? Like, you could vote off a friend.
Well, you can't... But, like, you know, like, with your real friends in real life, you're like...
You take a break, yeah.
You're like, you know what? I don't feel like hanging out with Greg for the next couple months. You know, got to take a little Greg break.
I hear that. I know what you mean. Well, this is about a biotech company being able to, taking the cloning technology that's been around for a while. Remember when they cloned the sheep way back? They've now been able to patent cloning dogs.
Mm.
And
oh.
Yes, so they're going to offer to clone your best friend. And the bidding, it's on auction. The bidding starts at $100,000. And basically, if you want your dog back exactly the same, well, in appearance, anyway, you can have your dog again.
Except this time he's like a Pet Cemetery dog, huh?
I know, right? Because remember when we listened to This American Life, there was that guy that had the amazingly docile, friendly, sweet bull. And he worked with the local university. They were working on cloning, and they got it cloned. And the next bull looked the same, but that man got mauled and put in the hospital several times by the not-so-friendly rebirth of that bull.
And what was so fascinating about that man, that farmer, rancher, was that every time he got gorged by the bull, Ira Glass would say to him, what do you think? Do you think that, like, it's time to give up and maybe this is not the same bull? Like, maybe this isn't the bull that died? And the man would not give up hope, ever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's no... They got their own personalities. It's just like adopting a strange dog. And I don't, like... Personally, I don't quite see the point. Like, I wouldn't want my pet to look exactly like the pet before if it didn't have the same personalities. The whole point. Like, that's what you love. You know?
Right. Well, you know what? Even if it had the same personality, that's just weird.
And what do you think that's going to do to the whole animal breeding program and, like, show dogs? Like, do you think a cloned dog could be a show dog? Or do you think they're going to say, no, you can't enter that. That's not, you know, that's cheating. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you had a breed that won every single...
I can't even begin to imagine the ramifications that it's going to have on the dog show world.
I know, in the breeding industry... Mind-boggling.
You know what? It's a fucking ridiculous world to begin with.
Yes.
With the dog breeding competitions.
Truly.
I'm going to say I'm going to go ahead and allow it. The clone dogs.
They can show, can
yes,
they?
Yes, okay. They can show. But they do get a 2-point penalty during the swimsuit competition.
Well, what kind of news have you got wrangled up for today, Justin?
You remember the movie, spoilers, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, right?
Oh, how could I forget? That movie made me laugh hard a lot.
I love that movie. Mm-hmm. We Rachel and I, anybody who listens to the show, you guys already know, we love the entire fucking Apatow crew. We're big fans, big supporters. And what was your favorite element of the Sarah Marshall show?
The British comedian guy character?
You liked him a
lot? He stole that goddamn movie. He did. He stole it right underneath everybody, and he was awesome, and that was my favorite part, was being so surprised by this character that seemed so minor at first, you know, kind of being so delightful.
What was cool about it, too, is that he wasn't such a typical character. Like, he wasn't a typical villain at all.
No.
He was actually kind of likable.
Yes, that's what was great about it.
And you got that feeling like... If you were the boyfriend, or the ex-boyfriend, if you were Jason Segel, where it's like, it would be so much easier if I could just fucking hate you.
Yeah.
You know?
Why'd you have to go and be so cool?
Yes, but actually, that's not what I was hoping to lead you to.
Oh, okay.
So let me ask again. What was your favorite element of that story that involved Dracula and Muppets?
Oh, please don't tell me. I'd be so excited to hear that they were going to make the Dracula musical puppet show, because...
That would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
I think I'd pee myself.
You know, I heard that Jason Segel started writing that as he was getting into Freaks and Geeks.
Really?
I heard that he actually wanted to do that. But here's some big news that is not exactly that, but hopefully still exciting.
Okay.
This comes from Variety. Jason Segel and Nick Stoller to create the next Muppet movie.
No!
Yes. Yes.
It's Jim Henson related, interestingly enough.
Disney has enlisted scribe thespian Jason Segel and helmer Nick Stoller to create the next Muppet movie for the studio. Segel and Stoller will write the script, and Stoller will direct.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that fantastic?
Oh, yeah, that sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun.
In Sarah Marshall, Segel's character writes a Dracula musical performed by puppets. Those cloth creatures were custom made by the Henson puppeteers.
No kidding!
Yes, they were. And the experience emboldened Segel to pitch his concept for a Muppets movie when he was invited in for a general meeting with the exec, Kristen Burr.
Yes, he was emboldened.
So apparently he was working with them and felt comfortable enough to come up and say, you know what, I've got an idea for the next Muppet movie.
You know, when a door halfway opens, sometimes you got to push that fucker all the way open. You know what I'm saying?
And what was cool is, like, if you think back to the Muppet movies that were made, like, in the 70s, or the late 70s, early 80s, like, right around there, and even, like, on the Muppet Show, it was for kids, but they were things that parents didn't have to sit through and just groan and roll their eyes.
Yes, you know? It understood that there needed to be a level of adult sophistication to keep the parents engrossed, much like Bugs Bunny.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, you know, but then what happened to Bugs Bunny? Space Jam and Looney Tunes back in action. And it became ridiculous, and it became for four-year-olds, you know?
I have to tell you, I think it's much smarter to market children's things like that to adults, because it's adults that ultimately fork out the money to pay for it, and it's smart to include them. Like, if they have to sit through it, it is kind of smart to make it fun for them, too.
You know what? Maybe not necessarily market to adults. Go ahead and market it to children, because children will fucking see anything, you know?
Right.
Alvin and the Chipmunks, the whatever it is. If you market to children and you make it look fun, they'll go see it. What'll happen, though, is if you have somebody like Jason Segel writing the Muppet movie, the adults who go because they have to go because they're taking their kids, they're going to say, hey, if you have to take your kids to a movie, go see this one because it's actually pretty funny. It's pretty good. You know, like, I laughed and I'm a dad, you know?
Yeah, that's what I was saying, too.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm very excited about that. And speaking of Muppets and puppets, that's going to be our topic today. We're going to talk about...
It's like the Jim Henson three-pack... release, the fantasy collection, the Jim Henson fantasy collection. That's what we're talking about.
Okay, so what is it, like 2 weeks ago, or not even, for your birthday.
My birthday present.
I bought you the Jim Henson DVD 3-pack, which is, it comes with Mirror Mask, Labyrinth, and...
The Dark Crystal.
Yes. So that's going to be our topic today. First, though, I want to play you guys a song. This is a song by a band called Human Wine. HUMANWINE, all caps, Human Wine, and the song Revolta Silenziosa.
Ooh, boy, that sounds exciting.
Silenziosa.
Oh.
Revolta Silenziosa is the name of the song by Human Wine that you guys are going to hear right now. It's a very fun song, very kind of, you said that it reminds you of the Dresden Dolls, and I think that one of the guys in the band is actually involved with Human Wine, so probably that's why it's called Punk Rock Cabaret.
Yes.
And so it's very theatrical, very, very musical. Here it goes. Poop.
Like it's fun. vicious brothers.
We'll never get out of this place alive.
These walls keep closing in.
Practice chains of leather.
Bubbling a thick blood lather.
Walk for ribs and broken cribs.
These walls keep closing in.
Paranoid isolation,
fueling up a steam machine.
The bells of freedom, liberty.
The smell of gunshot, bittersweet.
These walls keep closing in. Oh, where do we begin? Our dismantling,
we call it all the sin.
These walls keep closing in. Oh, where do we begin? Our dismantling.
Settle even bed, another sky is bent.
Dust on the settle even bed, another sky is bent.
I've got a stomach full of fingernails, another femur on my head. Will this dust ever settle even bed, another sky is bent?
Dust on the settle even bed, another sky is bent.
I've got a stomach full of fingernails, another femur on my head.
Eyeballs plug the mouths like hoses. Scared of all the naughty noses. Poking into our daydreams.
While in the distance glistening, that wall of bones, it holds our tongues. And scared of all the taste but rows of hands that speak to you and me. The sign rolls us up and deals out.
These walls keep closing in. Oh, where do we begin? Now dismantling, we call it all to sin.
These walls keep closing in.
I say, Reginald, how is the weather today?
You didn't make me spit mine out. I was going to slosh it around in my mouth like Listerine for you, but you made me swallow it because otherwise I would have spat it onto the mic.
Well, and that concludes our tea time. So, Rachel, we're talking about
the Jim Henson Fantasy Collection.
The Jim Henson Fantasy Collection.
It's a 3-DVD package.
It is a 3-DVD package.
Complete with two classics and one modern Jim Henson creation.
Two classics and one destined to be a classic.
That's right.
I should work for the voiceover for the late night infomercial for the DVD pack. Two classics and one destined to be a classic at a low, low price. How much would you pay for not one, not two, but three Jim Henson movies?
So we're both like 30-something. And the two movies that came out, you know, The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth came out when we were relatively young.
Not to be nitpicky.
Yeah.
I'm 30, hold the something.
Well, this year the something's coming.
Well, okay.
It's not that far off. But if you want to be that way, that's fine. So, what, Justin, what are your fond memories of these, the first two movies that we're familiar with from days of yore?
Well, I got to tell you, when I was a little kid, we used to rent VHS tapes from the library.
Mm-hmm.
And my go-to movies were Beetlejuice.
Yes.
And Labyrinth.
Ah.
Every time we went to the library, I wanted to watch Labyrinth. Loved that movie. I saw The Dark Crystal when I was a kid. I didn't remember it very well.
Yeah.
And we watched it again today, and vaguely things kind of came back. I barely remembered that movie.
Well, you're a bit younger than I am, so you may have been too young to remember it.
Well, it was actually released the year that I was born.
Well,
so
there you have it. That's kind of funny.
The big difference is that Labyrinth was actually in theaters when I was a little kid, so I was able to see it, and then it was on video, and I watched it all the time on video, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. Interesting little fun fact about Labyrinth. You know this. They wanted Sting originally before they approached David Bowie to play the part of the Goblin King.
I'm so glad that didn't work out, because...
Because it would be horrible.
David Bowie just... He's just so perfect. He's just so scintillating, and he is the Goblin King. That's what he is in that movie. Like, he's perfect. He's sort of effeminate, you know, and slinky and magical and mysterious, and he's got that gorgeous deep voice. And
yeah, I wonder if, like, how different it would be if Sting was the Goblin King, like, if he played it, what kind of movie it would be like. But you know, there's no fucking way that movie, like, the soundtrack would be anything near what it is.
Sting's like, "You remember me when the goblins stole your brother?" Right? Not the same movie.
He's all like... He's a jump magic. You don't have to put on the red. Jump magic.
Jump magic.
Yeah, I'd watch it. Sure. All right, let's do it. Let's call Sting.
Of those three movies, Justin, which one do you think had, in your opinion, which one had the best music?
Are you serious? Labyrinth.
I'm serious.
Labyrinth, by far.
But I thought you enjoyed the music in Mirror Mask.
Well, okay, let's go back.
Okay.
Number one, Dark Crystal. The music was nothing. It was almost non-existent.
Yeah,
was,
we don't even need to.
It was so boring. Labyrinth, not only... I would say it's one of the greatest movie soundtracks of all time. Like, I think it's a fucking fabulous soundtrack. And I mean, David Bowie does the entire soundtrack.
Oh, it's true. I know, and it's fantastic.
And you know, okay, David Bowie, this was about where he started to plateau about the time that Labyrinth came out. Everything before that was just, like, rising and amazing and awesome. And then he hit, you know, the 80s, and everything was kind of, like, evening out. And it was like, oh, okay, David Bowie's still pretty awesome. Where he's at now, you know, he's listenable. The Mirror Mask movie had a decent soundtrack, and there's actually a lot of cool scenes that include the music, where the music is pretty integral to what's going on in the action.
Yeah.
Like the scene where the little band pops out of the box and they're telling the story. Like, that part I loved. And the part where they're doing that Carpenter's song, Close to You.
Yes, yes.
Like, both of those scenes are really, really good scenes. Would I pop that CD in on my car and sing along on my way to work? No. But the opening theme to Labyrinth... I would absolutely listen to that on my way to work.
Okay, yeah, that's cool. Yeah, well, there you go. The music aficionado has spoken.
Well, what do you think?
Well, I thought that of the three movies, you know, Mirror Mask was a little bit different because while the Jim Henson Company provided the money, actually the teamwork of Dave McKeon and Neil Gaiman were pretty much actually doing all the, you know, all the decisions about the movie being made, I guess. And Dave McKean's a big fan of music, and I felt that the mood of that movie was very different, and I felt very much like I was stepping into the mind of an artist. Like, I felt like I was stepping into Dave McKean's personal universe, and the music was an essential component in giving you kind of like a dark but fantastic circus carnival-like feeling. And so I thought it was a really, the movie wouldn't have been the same if the music hadn't have been there. And you're right, like, I'm with you. Like, there were certain scenes where it was perfect, but I also think it would have been a totally different movie if it had different music in it. And so for that reason, I thought the music was really different from what I've seen before, and I really liked it. And I might pop it in and listen to it.
Yeah, I think that the music was a good part of Mirror Mask. But in the end, the thing about the music in Mirror Mask is that it really kind of puts you in a place where, you know, it's kind of like that broke down carnival kind of thing where everything sounds a little bit dysfunctional.
And, yeah.
And but everything about Labyrinth is just like, I'm going to take you away now. We're going on this big whimsical ride, you know?
Well, yeah. And that's the thing, is that the storytelling is different. I mean, each of those three movies has got they've all got similarities in theme, and that it's all a coming of age hero's journey kind of thing. And in two of them, the main characters are adolescent girls, and in one of them, it's a Gelfling. But they're all...
But he's really not completely unlike an adolescent girl.
I know, in a lot of ways. You're right about that. He's my least admirable main protagonist of the three protagonists.
Well, you know, and
sure.
I was thinking about that when we were watching that. It's hard to... I've tried watching The Dark Crystal since the time that I was a little kid, and it's hard to watch. It puts me to sleep every single time. And I wasn't even tired when we put it in. I feel really tired. It's so slow-paced. The music is so kind of droning and it kind of grating. You know, it's just...
Well, yeah, I'd have to say of the three, it's not the strongest of the three, but...
They didn't have any direction when they started that movie. When they started making The Dark Crystal, it was like Jim Henson said, I want to create this fantasy world. They hire Brian Froud to do the designs, to do all the conceptual work. But I don't think they really knew where they were going with that movie. Like, kind of like Star Wars. Like, they were kind of just like, they had a good idea, sort of the world they wanted to create. But they didn't really know exactly where they were going with it.
Yeah, definitely the strongest points of The Dark Crystal is Brian Froud's creative instincts and, you know, being a part of the whole look of it and being involved with that. And then I thought the puppets were fantastic and visually very interesting. The characters, with any fantasy movie, I mean, the storylines, you know, usually if you're lucky, you get a good storyline. But most of the people that love fantasy, they want to see cool worlds. They want to see cool characters.
Well, that's what's cool about Labyrinth, is that the whole point of the story, or the storytelling, or the way that the narrative works, is it's an encounter and another encounter.
Right.
You know, where your protagonist, her role is just to continue to get you to the next encounter.
It's similar to Alice in Wonderland that way.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And so you get to meet all these cool and interesting characters, and they're all different kinds of puppets. The thing about The Dark Crystal is there's really not that many characters. There's a few characters, but once you've met them all, that's your cast.
Well, but I will say that there's things going on in the world. Like, there's these neat little scenes where he's walking through the forest and, like, something eats something else and the moss all giggles and, you know, the flowers go, and they fly off.
Yeah.
And it's more kind of almost the environment they create, the little world they're creating, the details in it are really neat.
Yeah, all of that stuff was really cool. The story just wasn't very compelling to me.
Yeah, well, they're making a sequel.
I'm excited about it. I will see that. And I have a feeling that... The thing is, too, is like, you know, when The Dark Crystal came out, a lot of movies from right in that time frame, from the like late 70s, there's this kind of aesthetic in filmmaking where it's just kind of things move kind of slow and the music kind of accents speech, and every time somebody something happens, all of a sudden, you know, you hear this keyboard go chung chung,
right,
wah, 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 you know, or something like that, mm-hmm. and it's like, okay, boring. And it's like everything prior to that in filmmaking was a lot of like snappy talk, and everybody's like, hey Kat, where are you going tonight? Oh, I'm going to the Hop Sock, you know, like everybody's back and forth with the dialogue, and it's real snappy and it moves fast. And then, you know, after the 70s, everything's visual and big and like Rambo and explosions and non-fucking stop action. And it's like that little middle time, you know, it's like the, like that's the, like the adolescence of filmmaking, you know?
I think it's just in the 70s, everybody was dropping the acid, and in the 80s, it was cocaine. And that's why the tone and the pace changes in the movies. But, family-friendly show we've got here, folks. Hope your kids are listening in. The sequel to The Dark Crystal, for those of you who don't know it yet, is going to be called Power of the Dark Crystal. And we went to Comic-Con a couple years back, and they were doing some promotional work, and they said that it's going to be using puppets again, and it's going to be about set mostly in the underworld of the world where The Dark Crystal happens.
Okay, well, let's just hear real quick. When they announced that it was going to be puppets, people roared.
They lost it.
Yes.
Yes.
Everybody cheered. Nuts. And you know what? We just saw that movie, Prince Caspian, today.
Yeah.
And they're getting much, much better with the CGI. Like, it's starting to look good.
Yeah.
It will never replace having a physical thing in the world right there.
I absolutely agree with
anybody who tells you that it looks the same or that it acts better, or, you know, yes, the movement is more fluid, it looks like a cartoon. I cannot watch any CGI. I've never seen CGI happen where I was convinced that this is a physical entity living in that world.
No, I agree with you. And it used to be at the beginning of that technology, it was sort of distracting. You know, you'd see a movie with CGI in it, and the CGI was distracting me from the movie, and they are integrating it better, and it is quite beautiful. Like in Grendel, what was that movie?
Beowulf.
Yeah, that was really cool. But we won't talk about Beowulf. We're talking about the Jim Henson stuff. But the thing about this Power of the Dark Crystal movie is that they keep pushing back the release date. It was actually supposed to be out this year. They've pushed it out to next year. There's rumors that it's been canceled.
It's usually not a good sign.
And the Jim Henson Company refuses to comment, so might be a project that's in trouble.
Yeah, well, the date's getting pushed back a lot. That's usually a bad sign.
Yeah, yeah. So that's sad.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, hopefully if the Muppet movie comes out and it does well, maybe that will be enough to get people excited about another Jim Henson major film. I think that the Mirror Mask did not do very well.
No, it didn't. But, you know, the other thing is that in the theaters, The Dark Crystal and Labyrinth didn't do well. When it started to make money is when it went into VHS and DVD release. And they realized there was a market out there for it. People were making it part of their video collection permanently for their families. So, you know. And plus, they only put $4 million into it.
So you think that Mirror Mask will be, like, future generations?
I do. I think it's very inspiring. It had some amazing visual things going on. And the story, I think, was a great story.
To me, Mirror Mask, although there was a lot of things that I liked about it, and there were a lot of visual elements that I really enjoyed, it felt to me like this is the movie they make before they make the really awesome movie they're going to make.
I agree with you, and they probably will make that awesome movie, but I try to imagine myself like little 7-year-old Rachel. Like, if I was 7 years old right now and I saw Mirror Mask, that's the movie that 13-year-old Rachel is going to be like, oh my God, it just got me sparked. You know, my imagination went crazy. And sure, it's not a perfect movie, just like Star Wars was not a perfect movie, but it's beloved in your heart because it does things for you, you know,
yeah.
When you see it and you overlook the thing, you know. You're not looking at it from an adult's point of view, and you do want to own it, you know.
The Neverending Story and Labyrinth. Those were perfect movies.
See? I loved The Secret of Nim, actually. Got me really excited.
You know the main hero of The Secret of Nim?
Justin.
Justin.
Yes, I know. I know.
Wow, that's kind of creepy. Do you think that has anything to do with your attraction to me?
No. Yeah. You're more like Bugs Bunny than actually. You want to hear an interesting tidbit about Labyrinth?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, Brian Fraud was also involved in the creative visual elements.
Well, that's the big thing that makes Mirror Mask dissimilar from the other two, is that it's Dave McKeon,
right,
which is completely different look. And Brian Froud, everybody, you know, if you've seen those Crushed Fairy books, he does all those Crushed Fairies.
The Lady Cottingham's Book of Pressed Fairies. Yeah. Yes, they were fantastic. Well, the little baby that gets abducted, little Toby, that's little Toby Froud.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's Brian Froud's baby. And Toby Froud is now all grown up, and he's a big fan of Marilyn Manson now.
Well, that makes sense. They're very theatrical and full of fantasy, so.
And Wendy Froud, Brian's wife, he met her because she's a puppet maker, and she made Yoda.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, the Return of the Jedi, the best one out of all three, because of the puppets.
Right.
Jabba's palace. I mean, everything in Jabba's palace. Think about it, though. Think about how they added all of that shit when they re-released Return of the Jedi, and how horrible it looked. It looked terrible. And the song, the extended song with the dancers and everything, it looked like a fucking cartoon. It was...
It just burns my butt.
It does. You know what burns my butt is, like, George Lucas can't tell what makes a movie look good or not, you know?
Yeah, in some ways he's a total genius, and in other ways the man's just a doofus butt.
I think the reason that, like, Star Wars was so good originally is because he's a man that's completely impressed with technology.
I think
that's exactly what's the downfall of Star Wars now. You know, it's that's what's ruining it now. You have to have the Muppets in there. You have to have the characters in there.
Well, let me ask you this. I wanted to point out to you, actually, that did you ever notice the similarities between Labyrinth and that Maurice Sendak book I had called Outside Over There? It's about the little girl and her baby brother gets abducted by goblins, and she has to go into the other world to rescue him.
Well, I think you bought it because there were similarities, so...
Yeah.
So, yes.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah. But in the Maurice Sendak book, the goblins look like little babies.
I know.
Because here's the thing.
It's
like,
a creepy book.
Little Toby was cute. But in general, little babies do look like little goblins.
I know. Well, it's like, that's kind of an ancient folk tale, is that the baby got stolen by the changelings or the fairy folk or the goblins or, you know, that's an old folk tale.
Why do you think that the changelings and the goblins, why do they want babies? What's so desirable about babies?
You know, it might be a way to explain mental health problems or deformities in babies. You know, if you've got a small community of people and you've got a baby that's got Down syndrome, you know, back before they knew what Down syndrome was, that looks like a little magical baby. And so to explain that to the community, it would make sense to be like, why does this kid not act right? Well, this isn't really my baby. I'm raising the
goblin baby.
Yeah, I'm raising the little changeling that they gave me or whatever.
Well, that's kind of exciting. Kind of makes the baby sound cooler.
Actually, it does, yeah.
It's my goblin baby.
Yeah. Hopefully it doesn't mean they get to mistreat the baby, but...
No. I hope that that becomes, like, the new politically correct way to refer to, you know, people with learning disabilities as goblin baby. No?
I hope not. Did you think that Mirror Mask kind of had a Terry Gilliam feel to it?
The thing that would prevent me from saying it felt like a Terry Gilliam movie is that Terry Gilliam doesn't do anything that is that subtle or that small or that intimate. All of his characters are grandiose.
They're big, and things happen.
And,
yeah.
Yes, exactly. And all of the worlds are expansive and huge and open, and there's a lot of... there's not the little flowers that zip away like in The Dark Crystal. Instead, there's, you know, the moon comes alive and comes down and talks to you kind of thing.
Yeah, you're right.
So that, to me, it felt like maybe it had the inspiration of a Terry Gilliam movie, but not I couldn't see him directing something like that.
Which, speaking of him, actually, Time Bandits was one of my favorite childhood movies, too, of the fantasy genre.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that really, it freaked me out a little bit. I was a little afraid of it. Didn't quite know what to do with it, but I really liked it.
Well, it wasn't like a movie for kids, though.
No, it wasn't.
And
that's why.
And what was so cool about it is, like, this is a movie, like, this is exactly who, you know, the, like, for us, Mirror Mask and Labyrinth and Dark Crystal, that was, like, something that we can appreciate now, you know? Like, for a little kid to watch that and, like, don't touch it, Mom, it's pure evil! You know, like, that's not a satisfying resolution to a movie.
What was, oh, did you ever notice, actually, I was thinking about parallels between the three movies, and I think that when they made Mirror Mask, you know, they're very familiar with the Jim Henson fantasy genre, and I think they did a couple little homages in a way, or, you know, some parallels. And in the Mirror Mask story, she's got her little guy friend that helps her out named Valentine, and she's kind of on again, off again with him. They don't really get along at the beginning, and then there's the time where he turns her in to get money or rubies. And that reminds me of Hoggle and the Labyrinth, where they're kind of on again, off again, and then he betrays her. And
it didn't even occur to me, but yeah, I guess Hoggle and Valentine both have similar character traits.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of cool. And apparently, in, you know, books are an important part of Mirror Mask. There's a lot of book stuff going on. There's a whole library thing that they go to. And somebody froze the screen to take a look at what books they decided to put up. You know, it's like a fast scene, but if you freeze it pane by pane, you can see the books they put in there. And one of the books was Muppets in Space.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
I know, isn't that funny? What was your favorite part? What did you love about Labyrinth? I mean, we've talked about the music and David Bowie, but like, what are some of the specific things about it that you really loved?
Well,
clearly it's your favorite one.
It is.
Yeah.
There's the whole thing about Labyrinth, like the overarching thing is that even the people who are there to help you are kind of not giving you the whole story, or they're not always completely truthful, or they're misinterpreting what the truth should be. You know, when the little worm comes out,
right,
and that scene about it, if she gone that way, she gone straight to the castle,
right?
You know, like that stuff. Like, I love that scene. I love the scene where the hands come together to create the faces.
Yes.
Up or down, which way? And they're not really helping her. You know, nobody really gives her helpful information. And they're not really obstacles, because, you know, it seems like everybody kind of wants her to do well, but they're not giving her all the right answers.
It's kind of like the mishaps that happen, because they've all got, they live in that world.
Yeah.
So they're coming at it from their own viewpoint, and she's coming in. It's like when you go and visit another country, it's like people are talking to you, but you're not saying the same thing to each other.
Well, I mean forget another country, it's like walking through life. It's like, you know, people can do their best to try to help you, but they don't have the answers either,
right?
You know, so like all they can do is give you their interpretation of what they're able to do, you know,
right,
like
right.
One of us always lies and one of us always tells the truth, you
right.
know, so like you they're trying to help you, but they know they're limited. Go ahead.
I like the part where she's trying to make it through the maze, and she gets out her lipstick and makes little arrows on the pieces of tile below her.
Uh-huh.
And then she walks away, and then you see this little guy come up and pick up the tile and move it so that the arrow is facing the other direction.
Right, right.
It's those little details that are going on in that movie that are really awesome.
Yeah, I think that Labyrinth is the perfect blend of having those little details, like when the flowers fly away, and indulging in some of those. If they had the scene, like in the Dark Crystal, where he approaches those plants and they're like wiggly tentacle things that disappear, I feel like in Labyrinth, she would have had then an interaction with those.
Right,
you know,
right.
So like Labyrinth kind of knows when to kind of give you something fun to see in the background and when to indulge.
Mm. And it gives you certainly a lot of lovable characters.
Oh, you know who I really liked in Labyrinth? I like the homeless lady with the big trash thing on her.
Yes.
There you go, Charlie Bear. You know, so I liked her a lot.
She reminds me of the witch in the Dark Crystal.
Yeah, they're very similar.
And another similarity I noticed was when the witch comes out with Charlie Bear, it's like homegirl comes across all these things that were in her room, right? And doesn't she end up kind of like in her room, or she ends up...
Yeah.
There is a room that's like her room somehow.
It's that room.
Yeah. And in Mirror Mask, she keeps looking into her room.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's a different version of her room.
Right.
So that's exactly the same thing that's going on in Labyrinth.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's interesting. I never thought of that.
Yeah.
The one scene in Labyrinth that bored me a little bit, like when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And even to this day, I'm like, oh my God, Snore, is a scene where she's like at a ball and she's dancing with David Bowie.
Are you kidding me?
That was so boring.
Oh, see, that must have been made for the little girls because, oh my God, I love that part where she ends up in the sphere and everybody's got the masks on and she's got that fantastic dress, which I wanted so badly. I love that part.
Yeah, I didn't want the dress. So in the other one, in Dark Crystal, what was your favorite part?
Well, I like Dessert. I like the Skeksis a lot in the Dark Crystal. I like the bad guys quite a bit.
I like them, but I actually don't like the one that's kind of like always going, I don't like that one very much.
I don't think anybody did.
He kind of bugs.
Yeah, he does bug. And I liked the old gentle people, the old wise people. I can't remember what they're called right now. But they seem like an interesting mix between Native Americans and monks.
Yeah. They do that chanting.
Yeah. So I thought that was kind of cool. And I liked the details that we mentioned before that are happening.
I can't believe that you're not even mentioning what actually is the coolest part.
Okay, what's that?
The giant planet thing that shows, like, where all the worlds are going and, like, where they are. And that's how she's making her prophecies and how she predicts what's going to happen is...
That was kind of cool.
Oh, it was awesome and you know it.
I don't know. I guess it didn't do that for me the way it did for you.
Every time... I remember even when I was a little kid, like, I wanted to have enough globes to create this thing that she... Like, it is so fucking cool.
I have to say, though, about Labyrinth is that I had trouble liking the main character. She was so whiny.
The girl?
Yeah. Jennifer Connelly's character. Like, I loved everything that happened to her, but I hated how she was just, like, a fucking baby about everything. It's not fair, and, you know, and she'd, like, throw her little fits.
Yeah.
And she's supposed to be, like, 13 years old, and she's throwing these fits like a 2-year-old. That bothered me.
Well... That's kind of how 13-year-olds are.
No.
Yeah.
Sorry. No.
They are. They are. They totally
may. They may have. They may get upset and they may get angry, but they don't. She was literally handling it like a little toddler. Like the way she went about handling her anger was not the way a 13-year-old would.
Maybe they didn't write it with the exact words she might say.
Uh huh.
But I think that there's a lot of 13-year-olds that kind of have that attitude of like, oh, everything should go my way.
Well, of course, you know? That's true. Yeah. I'm with you on that, but I don't know. Well, I have to say that my vote for my favorite of the three would probably go to Mirror Mask is my favorite of the three.
Really?
I love Labyrinth. I never tire of Labyrinth, but my sophisticated adult tastes... I recommend that you see The Mirror Mask if you've not seen it. And love it or hate it on your own terms. But
I recommend that people watch The Mirror Mask. I would definitely recommend if you have never seen Labyrinth to go ahead and watch it. I was talking to Noah the other day, and he said that Labyrinth does not live up to your memory of it.
Well, Noah's an exceptional young man.
Is that how we explain that?
Yeah, he's a unique guy.
Okay. Yeah, to me, it's every time I watch it, it exceeds every one of my expectations. There's a short list of movies that I can see repeatedly, and Labyrinth is on. Some people can watch movies over and fucking over and over again.
I know, they.
And that's actually why we don't really buy DVDs anymore, is because once you've seen it, why would... I don't know.
You know a movie I will never tire of? We can have a different episode about this, but... I will never tire of Dune.
Really?
Never. I will never tire of the David Lynch Dune, and I will never tire of the sci-fi special series of Frank Herbert's Dune.
Well, I guess that's where we're different, isn't it?
Well, folks, that wraps up our riveting discussion of Jim Henson and his fabulousness. And until you hear from us again next time, go start a ruckus. That sucked, huh?
What?
My ending, it sucked, huh?
Okay, let me try.
Okay. Get the Viv in your vigor.
Help me, I've got Vim all over my vigor. Hey everybody, it's Justin and Rachel from the Ruckus, and we just wanted to say to all you single people out there, have a good weekend, and tell that special someone you love her. All right, that's the show. What am I even giving you the website for? www.theruckus.wordpress.com. Check out our MySpace. Give us an email, startaruckus@gmail.com. Look us up on Facebook. Google search us. Write a review on iTunes. Why don't you see if we're on YouTube? We might be on there also. Go ahead and put us in your Netflix queue and then download some porn. All right, everybody, go start a ruckus. I've got a piece of news. Yeah. Interesting little fun fact about that piece of news is that it's currently on the floor and the cat is laying on it.
Oh, he's having a nap on your news.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to wrangle it from
him. Okay, we'll take a time out.
Just one moment. I should do it like a magic trick, like how they remove the tablecloth.
Yes.
I'll move it so quickly he won't even know it's gone.
That kind of worked.
Yes.
He's still down there.
He sure is.
He looked a little surprised.
The other night he was sleeping and I saw him punch into the air and he went while he was asleep. It was pretty awesome. Okay.